Bienvenidas a Radio Menea. I'm Miriam Suela Perez.
And I'm Vero Valletti Flores, and we are two Latinx friends with wildly different music tastes.
Each week we bring you music from the Latinx artists that we love, and this week we're doing a little historical episode on Son Cubano.
Yeah, we were listening to a lot of song, looking at the history. I may or may not have picked up some claves that I had around the house to figure out the difference between son and salsa. But what did you bring for us first, Perez?
So we're doing this like loosely chronologically. So let's take a listen to Coralia by Sexteto Habanero.
Can you tell us about Sexteto Habanero?
So they were originally a group called Cuarteto Oriental, and they recorded the first known like recording of a son cubano in 1917.
Wow.
Yeah, and then they became the Sexteto. So that was part of like the evolution of son cubano, was like the number of people in the group, right? So Cuarteto is four, Sexteto is seven?
Six.
So that was part of it, was like how many people were in it and the different elements of it. So so we know like son cubano originated sometime in the beginning of the 20th century in likely in the rural areas of Cuba, probably in the Oriente, which is the eastern province of Cuba. You know, you'll notice that a lot of these artists, a majority of these artists, especially from this time, are Afro-descendant folks. Like that was really where a lot of these elements of the percussion and different things came from. The African influence of folks who had been brought to Cuba as slaves, and Cuba eliminated slavery in 1886, so relatively early, especially compared to the United States. And so then you see people traveling to Havana, both from the rural provinces, both people of African descent and people of Spanish descent, and then this sort of mixing that happens in rural areas between, you know, particularly like people who are low income. And then you get some of the elements that became Cuban son, sort of combination of things like the tres, which is like a classical Spanish, derived from like the classical Spanish guitar, and then these percussion elements that you were talking about as well.
Yeah, I was looking at all of these different, like, various instruments to, like, figure out, like, musically and sonically, like, what son is, you know, because...
Yeah.
Because Cuba's music is so integral to the way that, like, the rest of Latin America, like, forms a musical identity, that, like, I was trying to, like, separate, like, you know, or isolate son, maybe, and I was looking at the tres, and... it's such an interesting instrument. It's like a guitar, and it still has six instruments, but they're kind of like bunched in twos, you know? So it's sort of like, it looks like it's got three like sections of strings, you know? And apparently it came was developed to like play this style of music called changi, which is like a precursor to son. Super interesting.
Yeah. I think when we were brainstorming themes, we thought of maybe we do an episode about the tres, because we've done episodes about different instruments, but then we decided instead to do it about son cubano. So that was kind of how we landed on this. But yeah, I mean, this genre of music is such a story of migration. It's a story of the impacts of slavery. It's a story of even internal migration from rural areas to the cities. Like, it's just so interesting how that shows up again and again and again.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that what a lot of folks will hear in this is the DNA of salsa is like really intertwined in son cubano. And, you know, if you've listened to like our episodes on Fania and sort of like the birth of salsa or what is known as salsa in New York City, Cuban son is so integral to it. Because, like, again, like, if you've heard our episodes on, like, the Latin booms, you'll know that there was, like, a huge Cuban music scene in New York City in the 50s. So, like, a lot of those Cuban musicians were part of, like, New York City's musical DNA. Mm-hmm. But I was, like, listening for, I was like, okay, like, salsa sounds so similar to me.
Yeah.
In song. And I don't, and I was like, okay, like, trying to, like, understand it. I was, like, listening to the instruments, and I was like on like a clave tutorial, like with these claves that I had,
yeah,
like being like the 3-2 versus the 2-3, and I was like, I don't know if I'm totally there, but I think I've got like a better idea,
yeah, some sense of it
now.
yeah I don't have music theory. I'm not a musician. There's so many things that are like missing in my musical understanding, but yeah, I mean, from the research it seems like there's a couple of different elements, like the tres we talked about, the clave, the sort of like different percussion elements, like also bongos, maracas, things like that. A call and response structure also, which you can hear in some of these songs, and that to me also feels like you can see evidence of that particular mechanism in other African traditions, musical traditions as well, the call and response. Yeah. Definitely. And then as it expanded, you know, different musical instruments were added, right? So I think that's also what we were talking about this before. It's like, so yeah, sometimes it can be hard to distinguish exactly what makes something son cubano, because it's a genre, you know, as many genres, it's like constantly evolving the elements of it and the things that make that particular genre distinct.
Yeah.
So let's take a listen to the next song, which is by La Sonora Matancera, and it's called Mala Mujer.
Recordando tu querer. Pensando lloraba, mira que yo tengo fe, que yo nunca te olvidaba, mira que yo tengo fe, que yo nunca te olvidaba. Mala mujer no tiene corazón, 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 mátala, mátala.
Tiene corazón, mala mujer.
Mátala, 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 mátala.
No tiene corazón, mala mujer.
Pensaba que me quería.
So this is a really famous sonora. Where Celia got her start.
Yeah, so Celia got her start in this group, which is amazing. So yeah, one of the things that's told in the story of this group and in the story of Son Cubano as like a turning point in terms of popularity was that President Machado invited them to perform for his birthday party. And so that was sort of like a, I think, a bringing them into the mainstream and bringing Son Cubano into the mainstream in a particular way. And also potentially like a credibility thing, or like a, you know, sort of a giving them credibility and giving this particular genre credibility. So that was an interesting part of the story. This group was founded in 1924 and geography plays a lot of role in the naming conventions of these things. And so Matancera is actually from Matanzas, which is a province in Cuba. So you can see that in a lot of the different, some of the groups, and then also some of the types of son. There's, within Cuban son, there's, or son cubano, there's son montuno, there's son oriente. There's different ones that also relate to geographic aspects. And then I discovered, which I did not know, there's also son mexicano and son guatemalteco. There's sons outside of Cuba, which...
Yeah, I definitely did not know that. I thought that son was a... I mean, it is a Cuban thing, but I did not know there were all these other kinds of son.
Right, you thought it was like distinctly Cuban, yeah. And I think part of the influence of that is because during the Prohibition era is when Cuba and Havana specifically became like a big... destination, like a tourist destination for Americans who wanted to drink and party, and also like the mafia and whatever. And so that created like a sort of like a cultural exchange, because people were exposed to Cuban music, and then that music was exported to the U.S. Through groups like RCA Victor and other recording companies that were exposed to this kind of music.
Yeah, it's wild how like industry affects how music can spread, you know what I mean? Because like obviously music is like the hallmark of human culture, really. Like humans like will make music in under all conditions, but having an industry around it with like people who like either like want to buy tickets to see your band perform at this time, right? Or like wanting to purchase a recording like a little bit later when like recordings are more readily accessible to middle-class consumers. I think it's so fascinating. And I think that for this reason, we see Cuban music as being like sort of the DNA of so much of how we think about like Latino music in general, like Latino pop, really, like how Latino pop emerges from this like Cuban DNA, because like Latino pop is like a, you know, like a music industry situation, and Cuba's was the first like sort of like Latin music industry. In Mexico at the time also was like, you know, Mexico and Cuba also like had like a little bit later like big music industries. Those become like a huge part of the musical DNA of Latin America.
Yeah, it's so interesting, and how politics influences it so much, because like if Prohibition hadn't happened in the U.S., would have there been this like huge sort of tourist economy in Havana for people who wanted to drink from the U.S.? Or like if Cuba had also had Prohibition or something, like how would that have changed things in terms of like musical production? And then I also wonder, like, so you think about like what's happening with race in the United States in like the 20s and 30s, right? Like this is a very like deeply segregated, deeply racist time. And I wonder how that influenced like how the music was exported, whether it being like Cuban musicians, even if they were black, that changed things for people's perceptions of it. These are just questions I have, because I'm sure somebody has studied this. But
yeah, I mean, I think that to me, one thing that is wild to think about is that the president asking La Sonora Matancera to perform at his birthday party. That's had to be like an interesting regarding race. Like at any degree, right? Because like the politically powerful people of Cuba were white or European descended at the very least. And like the members of like the innovators of SON were for the most part also black.
Yeah.
So I think that that's super interesting to me. But I also know from like our Latin booms episode that there was a lot of Cuban migration to New York and to Harlem in particular, because there wasn't a place in Latin America where black people could be free the way that black people were free in Harlem.
Right.
You know, so like there was that, like there was like the connection to the United States because of like tourism and that industry and, you know, like Americans wanting to listen to Cuban music and the dance crazes that went along with it. But then like black Cuban musicians coming to New York and finding Harlem and finding like the freedom that like black people experienced in Harlem I remember reading about that and people feeling like, wow, this is not what we get in Cuba, right? So it's and it's not what you got anywhere else in the United States either, right? It's like this like a really particular, like, you know, like 40 square blocks of like space where like Black people in like the 30s, 40s, and 50s felt like they could be like creative and had art scenes that were just about like Black creativity, etc. So that's all super fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the dynamics are really interesting. And then, yeah, again, this question for me of like that's one aspect of the sort of race politic. And then, yeah, did the perception of like white Americans of this music, was it racialized differently because they were Cuban and Black versus just Black, like Black American, you know? And it's a question I don't know the answer to, but I'm just so curious about all the nuances of that too.
Wow. Yeah. Super interesting.
So we want to take a minute to talk about the fact that it's still our birthday month.
Yes, it's March. We're 8 years old. And we, every year around our birthday, we do like a little membership push because, God, our members really, really help us to keep this sustainable for us in so many ways.
So yeah, every March we ask folks to consider becoming a member of our show. Members get access to a separate feed of our episodes with ad-free episodes and episodes with an extra member segment at the end of every episode. Today, we're actually going to let everybody hear the member segment so you know kind of like what you've been missing out on if you're not a member. So stay tuned for that at the end of the episode. But you can become a member at $5, $10, or $15 a month. It's kind of like a pay-what-you-can sliding scale situation. And as an incentive to join in March this month, we'll send you a free merch item of your choice. So you'll get to look through what we have in our store, and I'll email you, and you tell me what you want, and I'll send it to you as a thank you for becoming a member.
Yeah, it really, really makes this possible for us. We have to, like, store all the audio online, you know, like, pay for our website. It's really, like, just the what it costs to, like, keep this podcast going. So yeah. We really are grateful to you all. And yeah. We hope you're enjoying our birthday month content. I think we've made some cool episodes for y'all.
I agree. And if you aren't down for, you can't do a monthly subscription, but you want to give a one-time gift, you can, our info, our Venmo and PayPal info is in the show notes. And any gift above $20 will also get a free merch item. So thanks so much for your support.
All right. What is the last song that you brought to this episode, Beres?
So this song is called Son de la Loma, and it's by Trio Matamoros.
Yo quiero saber de dónde son los cantantes, que lo encuentro muy grande y lo quiero conocer con su trova fascinante que me la quiero aprender. Yo quiero saber de dónde son los cantantes, que lo encuentro muy galante y los quiero conocer con su trova fascinante que me la quiero aprender.
So this one sounds so different than the others to me.
Yeah, like the what about it sounds different? Like what element are you hearing that feels different, you know?
I feel like it sounds almost like a different genre to me. Like yeah. It doesn't, yeah, I don't know. Like it sounds like a little bit more pared down. Like, again, like I feel like I'm like sitting there trying to listen mm-hmm. to the percussion because I feel like so much of this is in the percussion, but it's not all in the percussion. But yeah, this one feels a little bit different to me than the others.
One thing that's like noted is that they were particularly acclaimed for the harmony of their voices. I don't know if that's a piece that feels different. But yeah, I think this is where like, I'm sure someone, maybe a musicologist could trace like the like elements that were evolving, and also like a reminder that like the influence of son cubano came from different parts of the island and different parts,
right?
And those people came from different parts of the world, including like different parts of Africa. So like I can imagine there would be regional differences, but yeah, I don't know either because I can't tell.
And difference. So is it the trio in question, the singers who are harmonizing, right? And then who have like a band behind them? Do you know?
I think it's just the three of them, from what I can tell.
Just the three of them playing and singing.
Right. So that would also be make sense to the pared downness. Yeah, it says guitar, maraca, and claves. Yeah, different things.
Yeah,
all three
yeah.
were singers and
yeah,
composers.
It's like much more mm-hmm. pared down. So yeah. interesting.
So that's what you're hearing there. Yeah. Yeah. So they're actually considered like a Cuban trova group, which might also maybe have something to do with what sounds different, but they did play boleros and son. And this particular song I pulled out because they, what I was talking about, like with prohibition and like vacationing, you know, the sort of industry in Havana and RCA Victor, they're one of the groups that got a contract with RCA Victor and started traveling around performing nationally mm-hmm. and internationally, and that really like elevated sort of their music and also son specifically. And Benny More, who we're going to talk about in a little bit, was also a singer for the group in the 40s. They had like a multiple decade career.
Yeah,
but they are considered yeah. like a important part of the rise of son specifically.
Yeah.
And well, Miguel Matamoros, who this group is named for, is like one of the more prolific composers of Cuban son music. And this is one of his most famous songs, Son de la Loma.
So the members of the trio Matamoros were Miguel Matamoros, Rafael Cueto, and Ciro Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right. Dope.
Yep.
I love this. I love hearing all the various versions.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, I mean, this is me just like looking at this really old picture of the three of them. But from what it looks like to me, Rafael and Ciro are Afro-Cuban and Miguel, it looks more either Spanish or indigenous or both. So mm-hmm. it's interesting to think about. Also it being a group of like people from different backgrounds, which makes sense with the origins of the music too.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So you picked a few that are a little bit more contemporary. They're still not actually contemporary. They're just not from like the 20s and 30s. So tell us about first pick.
So the first one was one by Benny More, who is, I think this is like the oldest one that I picked. This is probably more like, I don't know, 40s or 50s, you think?
Yeah, I think so.
But I was listening to this one specifically because there is like a salsa version as well. And I was like trying to like listen to both of them and understand the differences. So let's listen to Que Bueno Baila Usted by Benny More.
Song. I thought I'd already brought it, but it turns out I brought other Benny More songs.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I looked, and you have brought Benny Moré a few times, mm-hmm. but different songs, and there is a very popular version of the song by Oscar de León.
Have we brought that one?
It's possible that you brought that one, because that feels like familiar to me in the context of this podcast a little bit, but maybe you brought the salsa version, and I was like trying to figure out, I was trying so hard to figure out, like, what's the difference between son and salsa, because salsa is like, you know, like, son is in the DNA of salsa, and I think mm-hmm. it's like, even like the 3-2 time signature, the, like, I have the claves here in front of me, it's like 1-2-3, 1-2, 1-2-3, 1-2, and like that way that I think about it is like that, like 1-2-3, like this is like in a, you know, 1-2-3-4-5-6-7-8 time signature, which mm-hmm. is, I don't know. This is all more complicated. This is above our pay grade. Both
of ours. Our unpaid pay grade.
This is, yeah, but this is above our $0 pay grade. But like, it's something about that I was like trying to listen to in this version of Que Bueno Baila Usted versus Oscar de León, which is like more firmly within salsa, is the parts of that are silent, the contratiempo is what that's called, mm-hmm. The little like silences in between when the claves are hitting, like where the emphasis of the beat and the instruments, and for dancers, like where you're like sort of like anchoring yourself in the beginning of your set of steps is what I tried, you know, like what like I could best figure out mm-hmm. is like one of the main differences. Obviously that there's many like instrumentation, etc., but like that's one of the main differences in those, and I was like trying to listen for them in the Oscar de León one and the Benny Moré one.
So I did bring this song. I looked it up. I brought this, the Oscar de León version, to our 16th episode about Venezuela.
Oh.
Wow. So that was like 8 years ago.
wow.
But yeah. I recognized it. Yeah, Benny Moré. Yeah. Oh, and I forgot this, but Benny Moré died from liver failure in the 60s. I just feel so sad when people die from things that sound like drinking related when they're musicians, you know?
Yeah. It is very sad. It's just like, oh, you did not have to go like that.
I know. But yeah, this is a classic and definitely a song I recognize hearing growing up.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
All right, this next one is definitely like one of the major sort of like musical cultural exports from Cuba of like, I think, our generation. Like people of our age really know this one well.
Yeah, for sure. This is like even one of the more popular songs mm-hmm. off of this album. Let's listen to Chan Chan by Buena Vista Social Club.
A Puerto voy para Mayarín. De Alto Cedro voy para Marcané. Llego a Puerto voy para Mayarín. De Alto Cedro voy para Marcané. Llego a Puerto voy para Mayarín.
Okay, so in your clave journey, this one stood out to you?
Yes. Well, the reason that I wanted to bring this one is because this one is so slow mm-hmm. and like compared to the others, but you can hear that clave so well, and it's so easy to follow because it's like very, very slow, and it's like sort of like another one of those like more pared back compositions, right? There's not like, you know, a million really fast percussion instruments where you like have to like, you know, like ponerte la cara tuerta, just like trying to like hear the clave or something. But this one, it felt so clear to me where the claves were and how they were coming in. And I feel like for any of our listeners who are like interested in figuring out like sort of like the sonic DNA of this genre and like it, specifically within the percussion, because like percussion is such a huge part of this genre, I thought that this was a nice one.
Yeah, for sure. And I know we've talked about this before, but you know, I think it's always interesting to remember that like Buena Vista Social Club was like a marketing concept, because there wasn't like, I think people who don't know would be like, oh, they all played at this social club called Buena Vista. Like,
right.
It didn't exist.
Right.
But yeah, there was this like kind of like gap, right, between, you know, 1960 and, you know, the 80s and 90s, where there was very little music production that was coming from Cuba to the U.S. I mean, there was still music production in Cuba, but, you know, it was government run. There's limitations to like the development of that industry, quote unquote. And then there's also the embargo that prevented and still prevents to this day Cuban, like the transfer of things from Cuba. But so these American, you know, documentarians, I guess, you know, people wanted to make this film, went to Cuba, and they did collect this group of musicians, all of whom are musicians and had been musicians, but were not necessarily playing together in some place, but created this, you know, in some ways very like incredible export, but also in some ways a little bit fabricated in sort of how it was framed.
Right, right.
But
there wasn't
did...
like a Cuban social club where this band had been like the long time.
No,
you know,
yeah,
orchestra. Yeah,
no, and that's just, it's just not how that was working in Cuba. But it doesn't mean these musicians didn't know each other or had never played together or whatever. But yeah, it wasn't, I mean, a lot of them were also like at the very end of their lives, like in their 80s and 90s when this happened. And so it did, I mean, it did create a career, a sort of another phase of career for a lot of these musicians. And they were able to travel, and like we got to see them on one of their tours in here in DC. And some of them still tour, but yeah, it's just, it was a really interesting concept, but it did, you know, create this documentation of a particular style of music, a lot of which is very much, son cubano.
Yeah, and one of the reasons also, so like the reason that I wanted to bring this song is because of the percussion, and I was so interested in that. And when Perez and I were talking about this episode coming in, there's this like sort of like wild contention in the Wikipedia about son, about how it as a genre is like the introduction of the drum to mainstream music, which is like, what? You know? like I think that like that feels like both possible in the sense of what we were discussing before as like Cuban music being like really integral DNA to what we think about as mainstream Latino music these days, but also like that maybe feels hard to believe because there are so many enslaved peoples who brought their own drumming traditions to wherever they were brought to be enslaved, and like traditions emerged from that. But I think that like the part that feels vague is like, what does mainstream mean? Like, what does mainstream music, and what mainstream are you talking about?
Yeah. But
it sounds like, you know, there was at least like in how like maybe like mainstream Latin music in like the 20s and 30s, like the kinds of percussion that were being listened to, like the song was bringing something new at the very least. But yeah, I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of a wild claim. I mean, also like that's from Wikipedia. Wikipedia is definitely written from a U.S. voice, right? Like it is a U.S. company written from a U.S. voice, although there are Wikipedias around the world, and like there's Wikipedia in Spanish, right, in different languages. But this Wikipedia, you know, what I'm referencing is definitely like, I think you can say probably mostly influenced by Americans. So I think when they say that, that's what the position, because also drums existed in indigenous communities in the Americas as well, right? So it's like,
of course, yeah.
It's like, you know, I think son cubano has, you can say it had a huge influence, but a lot of it has to do with those political and economic factors we're talking about, more so than like some claim to the beginning of something, you know?
Right, right.
Okay, I know you never want to leave an episode with only men, so I have another. That's right. I have a woman for our member segment as well, but let's listen to this one first.
Yeah, I really did want to bring a woman, so I brought this señora that we got to see once. She also became like a sort of popular singer in the wake of the Buena Vista Social Club fame. And so this is Mueve la Cintura Mulato by Omara Portuondo.
¿Qué pasa por mí? No me puedo contener. Cada vez que miro a mi mulatón, no sé qué pasa por mí, no me puedo contener. Y le digo así, y le digo así: mulato, tienes en la cintura una tembladera que arrebata. Mulato, tiene tu dulce boca una risa loca que me mata. Cada vez que miro a mi mulatón, no sé qué pasa por mí, no me puedo contener. Cada vez que miro a mi mulatón, no sé qué pasa por mí, no me puedo contener. Y le digo así, y le digo así: mulato, tienes en la cintura.
So beautiful.
Yeah, it is. I think this is a really beautiful one. And I really love Omara Portuondo's voice. So yeah, I wanted to close out our episode with something by her.
She's still around, you know?
I think she is. I mean, we saw her that one time, but that was at this point, I feel like, maybe like 10 years ago. Maybe not so much, but...
No, yeah, it looks like she's still around. She's 93.
Good for her. She's looking good for 93,
I know.
Too.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Amazing. Well, may she have an even longer life. I think she still might even be touring, so if you get a chance to catch her, y'all should do it. We have so much fun.
Yeah, she's still a member of the Buena Vista Social Club, being the only original vocalist to do so. I think she was younger than a lot of the other people. I mean, not that, you know, she's 93, but still. Incredible. And she's seen some things, you know?
Yeah, I know she has. All right, so for our members, you brought another mujer for us.
Yeah, so this
is... more contemporary.
Much more contemporary, although it's still from the 90s. Wow, we're old. So yeah, this is a song by Gloria Estefan, and it's called Montuno. Let's take a listen.
Tiene pica pica y también saoco.
¿Por qué será?
Porque ha nacido del vientre del Caribe y el mundo recibe todo el calor que trae el sol.
I love Gloria Estefan.
Yeah.
Yeah. This album is so nostalgic for me, you know? Yeah, we'll link in the show notes. We did a whole episode about this album, so you can hear me talk more about it. But this is a song I think of when I think of Son, because the lyrics are actually about Son, and she talks about the origins of it and some of that. So that was sort of the association in my mind. I don't know if you, from your like brief study this afternoon, if you feel like you can see or hear any elements of Son in this song. That's put you on the spot.
But. Yeah, I feel like I could hear it. I feel like I want to like, I feel like the way that I am most like able to get it is by playing my claves alongside with them. Don't ask why I have claves.
I love that you have claves.
I have claves and I have a cowbell.
I love that. You never know when you might need a cowbell, you know?
Yeah, you never know when you want to be
a party.
There's a guy at Santa Salsa, which is a Venezuelan street food place and bar. Mm-hmm. They sell like the best Venezuelan street hot dogs in New York there. Mm, yeah. And they have good like Spanish language karaoke there. Oh. But there's also like not infrequently a dude that shows up with a cowbell and he like plays along to the cowbell in whatever music has cowbell, like in any like salsa or like any music that like has cowbell in it, he'll just like play along. So it's like if you're like on one side of the bar and he's on the other side of the bar, it's just like, who brought a cowbell? And it's like, kind of like interesting and dope.
Is but he good though?
I
so he knows
he
how
is,
to do
he's
it.
He's very good. Okay. He's nice on okay. the cowbell.
That's the
but
important
I can
part.
Imagine if you're next to him, it's kind of a lot.
I love the commitment though. I love the commitment. Yeah. I do. Yeah. I also hope he goes to the protest with his cowbell.
I don't think that's ever
going to
be me.
No, that's not really your style. Okay, for some reason that made me think of the there's DC go-go music is like an important musical genre that came out of DC, and Chuck Brown is like the father of go-go. And I was at a go-go show not too long ago, and there's a guy who always comes to the go-go shows with a painting that he painted of Chuck Brown, like a huge sort of like memorial painting, and he just stands at the show and holds up this Chuck Brown painting. And apparently he's like always at the shows because my friend was like, oh yeah, that's the guy with the Chuck Brown. Like, so anyway,
I love that for him.
Just like the commitment, you know, like I can really appreciate the commitment.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, you know, like this album, one of the things that's interesting about this album is it was actually her first Spanish language album as a solo artist. And there was some skepticism about whether it could be successful because, you know, she was known for Miami Sound Machine and, you know, all the stuff that, Conga, all that, those things that were in English. And this album ended up being extremely successful. And I mean, it's one of my favorite albums of all time, both for the nostalgia of it, but also I think it's just, there's like many, many beautiful songs on it. And she has an incredible voice and, I think does a good job of like interpreting Cuban music and translating it and so yeah, I think she's definitely a sonera and has a beautiful voice, and I really love this song.
Yeah, thank you for bringing this.
All right, what's your last one for our members?
So I brought another like pretty classic like early days sonero. This is Compay Segundo and it's La Negra Tomasa.
Estoy tan enamorado de la negra Tomasa que cuando se va de casa, qué triste me pongo. Estoy tan enamorado de la negra Tomasa que cuando se va de casa, qué triste me pongo. Ay, 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 esa negra linda que me echó bilongo, esa negra linda, re linda, que me echó bilongo. Nada más que me gusta la comida que me cocina, nada más que me gusta la café que ella me cuela, nada más que me gusta la comida que me cocina, nada más que me gusta la café que ella me cuela.
a good storyteller.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really nice story, although I have to say I chose this again because of the claves.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you can hear them pretty well on here too. Like, this is my commitment to y'all. I was literally like clapping along to all of my picks, being like, okay, what's going on here? Like, trying
you,
so
like,
hard
lost
to understand.
Track of time. I was like, did Veto, is yeah. Veto fall down? Like, why? What's going on? Yeah. And you're like, I'm
Ben
lost in YouTube
me.
Playing my clavis.
Ben has texted me, yeah. At the time that we were supposed to start, there was nothing in the document that we had
from
set up.
Veto. Yeah.
And you're like, did you forget? Are you like, not paying it? What's right. happening here? And I'm like, oh, no, no. I'm just having a little clave lesson on YouTube because I need to deeply understand what's happening here.
I love that about you.
Yeah, that's my commitment to y'all.
Yeah.
But this is a great song, and I had a lot of fun. Also, mm-hmm. just like, it's fun for me, you know, to like yeah. try to like listen in to and like find like the little details of music. I was telling Bettis that like, in some ways, this is what I really love about seeing like highly instrumentation, like a lot of that's like music that has a like high level of instrumentation, seeing that live,
mm-hmm.
because I'm able to like focus in on each member of a band or an orchestra and then like hear their contribution and be able to isolate it and then like pull back out and like hear it like as a whole and like do that with like every instrument. I love doing that in like mm-hmm. any sort of like band orchestra type scenario, but like I wish that like every single song you could like have like a audio interface where like each instrument is pulled out and you could isolate them and listen to them again and listen it to within the whole context and then like put one instrument at a time throughout the whole song. I just like, that's what I want for like every song and like as I'm figuring out a genre, and I was like, that's what I was looking for here, and it's clearly not available. But
I'm sure,
you know, that's my dream.
Somewhere.
If you're listening to me and you know how to do this, like, text me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like we needed like a version of a music's file that's like decompressed and like in instrument by instrument. Like, you could create something like that, but yeah, to do it with something existing.
Yeah, I remember there I had this friend who showed me this song that like it's like the barometer by which I compare like knowing how like being able to differentiate genres, and I can't even tell you what this is, but this friend of mine, like, she was into like all these like various electronic music genres and like different kinds of house and etc., and so she like had this track that like played one like a bunch of different genres and was like, this is this genre, and then like, and it's like, this is this genre, and like explained it in that way and like did it sort of also as a dance song, so it was like fun to listen to and like a vibe, but also like teaching you something really concrete in a way that like you could listen to it and put the genre next to it and be like, okay, I understand what's different from one thing to the other thing. And I feel like I just could do that all day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like another level of like music nerdery.
Yeah, yeah, love it.
And Compay is another Buena Vista sort of collaborator, and really got to have another moment in his late seniorhood as part of that group.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this was really fun. I hope that you all have really enjoyed our deep dive into Son. I feel like because of Cuba's particular like location and socio-political context of like what was happening in the United States, what was happening in Cuba, what was happening in like capitalism and music industry, like I feel like it has such a huge and outsized impact on how we think about Latino music today. So it's been really cool to get into some of that DNA.
Mm-hmm. And it's like a deep dive, and there's so much more because it's such a
oh
big
my God,
topic.
Yes,
it's
barely scratched the surface.
It's deep for us, but it's definitely only an introduction. Yeah. So, but yeah, hopefully you've sort of whet your appetite for this music. It's not, interestingly, like not that popular in Cuba anymore. You know, like people have moved on to a lot of the genres like salsa and other things that have like come from it. But I still really love a lot of this music. So thanks so much for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening.
All the info about the songs is in our show notes at brothermania.com. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter. And I saw a joke from a comedian being like, Twitter is the only thing I will consistently dead name.
So good.
Agreed. And we have a newsletter as well. So check all those links are down below in the show notes.
Yeah. And thank you as always to Maite for your editing help. And hasta la próxima.
Bye.